Well, hey, hey, guys, Dave Schrein here, and I am coming at you today with a very special edition of the Church Marketing Podcast. You know, this past week, we gathered with the instructors for the certification lab happening this year in Dallas and in St. Louis, and we had an incredible conversation about church communication. And so it was so good, and it was so meaty with practical information and practical tips and tricks that you can implement, you know, today in your church communication department, or whatever that may look like. I know it looks so different for every single church, but it was so good that I really wanted to take the Google Hangout that we ran and, you know, pull that audio and make it available for you here. So, I'm just going to turn it over to the conversation. It's myself, Jerry True, Mark McDonald, Kelly Hartnett, and Phil Battle. And we just talked for about 60 minutes. And I hope you enjoy it. If you haven't been considering going to the certification lab, I'll talk a little bit about it at the beginning so you can learn about it. And I'll talk more about it at the end. But regardless, whether or not you're planning on attending, this conversation is going to be absolutely positively spectacular. You're really going to enjoy it, and I think you'll walk away with a lot of good stuff. Okay, so without any further delay, here is the Certification Lab Instructor Hangout. Hey guys, my name is Dave Schrein. Thank you so much for taking time to hang out with me and our Certification Lab instructors today. We're really excited. We've been looking forward to this for a while, ever since we did the last one. And today we really hope that no matter where you are in your organization, in church communication, whatever it is that you are responsible for, whatever your ministry looks like, we really want to help you walk away today with some really great implementable things that you can take and start running with right away. And so basically the whole thing today, this certification lab, it's sponsored by Monk Development. We're really excited to be pulling it off again. We've got two dates this year that I just want to briefly mention before we get into the thick of things. Basically, the first set of dates, it's going to be, I've got it here, we've got it in Dallas, and those dates are going to be March 16th and March 17th, and we have another certification lab in St. Louis, and the dates for that are June 8th and June 9th. So really just keep that in the back of your mind as we're talking. If there's some things that we hit today, you're like, man, I'd really like to learn more about that. That's what this is all about, getting you equipped to do your job in a more effective and more excellent way. So real quick, I just want to introduce our instructors here on the call with us today. First, we have Jerry True. And I want to ask each of you, the Super Bowl was just last weekend, and I want to know, what was your favorite commercial from the Super Bowl? So Jerry True, welcoming you today. What was your favorite moment from the Super Bowl, favorite commercial?
I'd say I tended to lean towards the sentimental Budweiser dog story with the horses, saving the day. That was probably my favorite.
You're soft for the puppy.
Let me get this straight. Jerry True says Budweiser.
Very good. Hey, Kelly. Kelly Hartnett is joining us. Kelly, what was your favorite commercial from the Super Bowl?
The one that made me laugh out loud was the Dodge one with the elderly folks giving advice for life. That was great.
Very good, very good. Mark McDonald, very glad to have you here. And same question, man. Go for it.
Okay, I'm not a big Super Bowl fan. I was working with the church in Atlanta and was on my way back, so I missed the entire Super Bowl. However, I'm always interested in not necessarily what creates the buzz from advertising, but there's actually a group of people that plot to see, it's called brand consideration. So it's like they watch a week before and then a couple of days before, and then the Super Bowl happens, and the people who actually decide that they're going to consider purchasing from the brand based upon the ads and how much it fluctuates. And would you believe, by far, almost double the amount of considerations, purchase considerations, were made for McDonald's from any of the other commercials.
Wow. Didn't see that one coming.
I didn't either. And would you believe that Nationwide was number two? And that was like the worst ad ever.
Yeah, it was the worst ad ever, but that was the one that everybody was talking about afterwards. Very interesting. Very interesting. Thanks for that little tidbit. Hope you've got more of those stored up here, because we've got a good amount of people chiming in. And Phil Bowdle, how you doing, my man?
Doing great, Dave.
Good. And you're a new daddy too, right?
I am a new daddy. He's about six weeks old tomorrow.
So. Congratulations, okay, you must have some pictures. Man, that's awesome.
I don't have pictures to pull up. I can pull them on my phone and do this.
But. Yeah, as any good father can do, right?
You can see when my life dramatically changed, because it went from stage design and behind the scenes to pictures of my kids. So
very good, man. What was your favorite commercial from the Super Bowl?
I gotta say I was impressed by how bad that Nationwide commercial was. So that really stuck out to me. That it was impressive. Yeah,
absolutely. But yeah, like I said, that was all that I heard. I don't know if the same thing for you guys. That was all that I heard the next day on the news, was people talking about how bad it was. Well, that's fun to kind of talk a little bit about that, but let's turn the corner here. Let's start talking about church communications. It's something that I'm really interested in. I know I've been doing church communications for really solidly for the last 4 years, and so I've just kind of prepared some questions, some directions that I'd like to go to really kind of pick your brains and get some quick wins for me and for my ministry, and hopefully for the people who are watching as well, that we could kind of walk away with some good things that we can implement. And the first place that I want to start off with is I want to start off with the idea of communication struggles. I know that for me, when I first got started, I found that I was struggling through all sorts of things, from resistance from staff to kind of implementing things to not even knowing what a communication department should look like. So what are some of the most common struggles? I mean, I know we're going on our third or fourth certification lab here, but based upon that and your interactions with church communicators, Mark, let's start with you. Like, what are some of the communication struggles that you hear as common themes coming up over and over again?
Well, probably the biggest thing is people just don't have the time. Every time, I mean, I don't actually work in a church, but I work with a lot of churches and help them with their communications. And what I see is that I can almost see them cloud over when I'm saying you have to make sure you get this done, this done, this done. And what ends up happening is that ultimately they just look at me and say, how on earth do I get all of that done? So My recommendation is to start prioritizing, trying to figure out, how do you tier your communication so that you make sure that the right stuff gets to the right people, and some of the stuff that you're doing probably isn't all that necessary.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Phil, what are some ideas of ways people, or not ideas of ways people, but what are some of the other themes that you hear emerging of struggles that people have when it comes to church communication?
I think the average person we talk to, a lot of people coming in, are, they kind of call them the Lone Ranger communicator. They're that person, I just think they're that person on the desk and somewhere in their office that everybody just dumps stuff on, and most of the time that person's overwhelmed, they're stressed, they've got way more on their plate that they can handle and stuff. So I think what I love about the Cert Lab from all of the communicators and everything is all about getting practical. It's not about this big conference that you're going to hear inspiration about and then you're going to leave and there's nothing that you can walk away with, So what some great things you'd walk away from with this, and things that have helped, I think all of us at some point, is figuring out even some tools and resources to help you get more structured, to help people communicate better to you so you can do a better job to communicate for your church, to help getting in good and healthy rhythms to for managing your week so you can be efficient with your time, and just all kinds of practical tips like that that help get less moving parts in your week so that you can do a really good job with what you have.
Yeah, that rhythm topic that you're talking about, I know that was a real struggle for me. I was having a really hard time, laying everything out so that I could see what was happening, see what was going on, and get into a good rhythm of, what appears where, when does it appear where, what gets a stage announcement and what stage announcements are happening. And Jerry, you and I talked quite a bit about that, and we also talked through some other communication struggles several years ago when I was first getting started. What are some of the other things that you're seeing and hearing from, church communicators who they really want to do a good job, but they're hitting the wall on certain areas? What are those areas that you see?
Sometimes it comes down to they're working to implement a new process, and then someone ignores the process, and then when you go to talk to them about what they just did. They don't see it as important or relevant, and they think that they get to do whatever they want to do whenever they want to do it. And so to ultimately what that takes is just building relationship. It's just taking the time to help communicate that you genuinely do care about what their ministry is, but there needs to be some healthy boundaries, healthy guardrails that help guide and bring about a consistent quality and consistent message so you don't overwhelm people, so you can leave them at a place where they really truly understand what's most important next.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Now, Kelly, I want to give you a chance to answer that question if you'd like, but I also have another one. I want to turn the conversation to, you know, what does it really look like for us to take those struggles and turn them around into excellent church communications? And so if you want to speak into, you know, what some of those struggles are that you're seeing, feel free to answer that, but I really want you to get to that question of, you know, what does excellence in church communication really look like? What's the bar that we're setting?
Sure. I mean, I think the struggle that I face most often, even in a small, pretty new church plant, is there's so much going on all the time, and it's hard to know how to engage people without overwhelming them.
Yeah.
And so to be able to have an excellent communication structure, you have to have processes in place. You can't just decide the day you sit down to do the bulletin, you can't decide that day what's going to go in it. And so it's really important to have some tools that you can use, some formats, some processes. One of the things that I use, Dave, is a communication request form, so that anytime anybody on our staff needs to have something shared with our church family, I ask them to fill out the form. They put all the details on it. They let me know what they're thinking in terms of a communication strategy, and then we have a conversation about it so everybody knows what to expect. I make sure I have exactly the right information, because that's one of the things in excellence. You know, I tend to think of excellence as really pretty graphic design and something that grabs you and compels you. And honestly, excellent church communication means it's concise, it's correct, it's consistent, and then we can get to compelling. And so to make sure that you have something that you can always look at right in front of you that has all the correct information that you can transfer to all your channels is really helpful to me.
Yeah. Jerry, I know that, you know, you oversee a much larger area than just communications. You know, what do you see as, you know, excellence looking like in, you know, the communications department, and how that interfaces with all the other departments too? Like, what does that partnership in communication excellence look like?
Well, we've really had to work to decide what is most important for the communication team to own, and what is important for maybe the ministry to own, and have the freedom to be able to move forward with, not have to always be slowed down by a communication team that has to review every little thing that they do. So we're striking a balance between ensuring that there's the timeliness of communication, while not always maybe necessarily looking as pretty or compelling as we would like it to do. So really, what we want is authentic communication that shows that we care most about engaging the body and helping people get connected than we do about forcing people into a certain process or style that we expect them to follow. Now, we do have a style guide. There are some standards that we do follow, but we also are giving some flexibility and freedom to that. So we look at excellence is really an extension of authenticity. So, for instance, there's times when a last-minute video is requested at maybe 2 days before it's needed in a service. And we just say, well, we can do that, but it's going to be an iPhone video. So as long as you're okay with an iPhone video,
yeah,
you may come across really authentically in the moment. We just need to own that's good enough, that's excellent enough for what the need is, and we make the decision in the moment of whether we want to allow for that or not, and we talk through it. So it's that flexibility, but yet realizing that there's times when you have to give in to something that may not be as much or as perfect as you'd like it to be.
Yeah, no, I really like that. I mean, Kelly's leaning into the systems and the processes, and then Jerry, you're really leaning into, you know, there's a level of excellence in, you know, level of priority and who does what, and getting those boundaries really clear so that there's an understanding across the board, right? Like, we don't have a miscommunication within our communication department, right? And I think that's something that I had struggled with, and I think a lot of communication directors struggle out there. But if we pursue excellence in that, I think that does really bring us to a really healthy place. Now, Mark, those are a couple tactile things. Do you see any other areas of excellence that maybe aren't so clear to, you know, that play out in a week in, week out, day in, day out basis, but that need to be on our radar in terms of, you know, hey, we're leading a communications department. We need to pursue excellence in this area.
Yeah, I think that oftentimes, and I know that that they're going to give me a hard time, but we really need to figure out what we want to be known for. There, yeah, mark that down. This is the first time that I say it. But I guess that oftentimes we have all these individual ministries of a church, and the church is so busy doing a lot of stuff, and I think that all of those ministries have to fall under a larger umbrella, and the more that you can have each of your ministries actually working together so that your church can be known for something in the community, and I guess that it's not necessarily just being known for being a church, because sadly the community is growing and the churches aren't. So what we're seeing through demographic studies and research is that, you know, the average person moving into a community is not looking for a church the way that they used to. So what is it that is that standout emotion or the standout solution that you're actually offering your community? And the more that you can become consistent so that it becomes that thread that runs through all of your communications, whether it's your youth communications or your children's communications or, you know, there's just so many things that we're doing, and oftentimes we're not building the larger quote-unquote brand of the church. We're just trying to self-promote each of these individual events.
So the way I hear you kind of wording it is, I hear you kind of saying, like, people aren't necessarily looking for a church. So if all you're trying to do is just be a quote-unquote church in the community, you shut your doors, you're not necessarily missed because the community wasn't looking for you in the first place. But it's kind of like, what is that thing that if you did close your doors, your community would then be missing? Like, they would be like, wow, I missed that organization being there. Is that kind of what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. If your church went away today, what would your congregation actually miss? And oftentimes, I mean, that's just a sobering realization that most pastors, when I ask them that question, they don't even know what it is. Yeah. Well, if we as leadership don't know what it is, then the people in the congregation, I mean, you could have many, many things that people might miss, but if you can get them all to somewhat miss the same thing, that's what you need to be known for.
I like that.
And in order to be able to do that, you need to be able to actually verbalize it and say it over and over again to the congregation so that they instantly know, oh, that is what I come to church for. This is what this church does in my life. This is what it fulfills in my life.
I like that bigger. It binds them to something bigger than just a building. So now, you're always talking about being known for something. I'm going to give everybody
what was that again?
What's that? Yeah, exactly. You're always talking about being known for something. Hey, instructors, what is Mark known for? What's his affinity, his main affinity? Anybody know?
Pepsi Max.
Pepsi Max right there. Look at that. See, and if Mark were to sign off right now, we would know that the biggest Pepsi Max fan in the world, you got to get the label pointed out, Mark. The biggest Pepsi Max fan in the world would be off the call. So, yeah, Mark, you definitely own that be known for something. Phil, I want to turn the corner a little bit, and I want to, you know, we're talking about pursuing excellence. We're talking about struggles and finding excellence in those struggles. You know, I know that you just, you know, in the last year, you moved into kind of the next level up position and influence at your church, but for a while, you were running as the communications director, and you had a team that you were working with, and I know that a lot of communicators out there, they are looking at it in terms of, it's just me. I'm 20, I'm 30 hours a week, I might be 32 hours full-time, but I'm not exempt. I've got limited resources, I'm having trouble with volunteers. So, you know, what is the transition thing? You've kind of been in both places, right? You've been in the communication director's shoes, and then you've been the one kind of overseeing and kind of helped that communication director make the most with their resources. You know, what does it look like for us to begin pursuing excellence with limited resources? How do we get to that place, you know, knowing that we've only got these things available to us? How do we translate that? How do we begin to make sense of that, you know, conundrum?
Well, I think for me and for a lot of people, it just means we've got to start redefining excellence. And often we look at excellence as what the bigger church in our town is doing. We look at what they're doing on TV or what somebody in our industry is doing. And I think that's the wrong way to look at it, because I think I've learned to try to shift from excellence as being this mark that I'm trying to hit to the best I can with what I have. That's what excellence looks like for me in each area. And that's raising the bar as you go, but you know, doing the very best you can with what you've got and being able to rest in that. And then I think the other side of it is stewardship. We're called to be a good steward with what we're able to control. And sometimes in our roles, we don't have full control over being able to make sure that something is done with excellence. But what we can do is be a good steward of what we do have control over, be able to be a good steward of the time, the talent, resources, and abilities we have, and bring that to a higher level of excellence. Be a good steward of what we've got. And that's what redefining excellence looks like to me. So I think so many people are stuck and just trying to hit this mark that they'll never arrive at, instead of just making progress with where they can, you know?
Well, and some of the biggest mistakes I've made have been trying to hit a mark that I'm simply not capable of hitting, and that's ends up being the exact opposite of excellence. And so I totally agree with you, Phil. I think that's really important.
Absolutely. And, you know, what I hear in a lot of what you're saying there, Phil, is really some leadership stuff. And maybe when we become defined by whatever our title is, you know, whether, you know, we're like, well, I'm not a communication pastor, or I'm not the communication director, I'm called an administrative assistant, or I'm called, you know, the communicator assistant, or whatever it is. I think a lot of times we let that define the level of leadership that we can bring into something, and then say, no, I have permission to kind of redefine what excellence looks like, and I have kind of permission to lead in this area. I mean, do you think that plays a part in it, really looking at it?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think a lot of people are content with just, you know, doing the bulletin every week and doing what they're doing, because there is a level of comfort in that. But I think one of the things that I'm excited to see in this area of creative arts and communications, and a lot of what we talk about at the CERT Lab, is how do you go from looking at yourself as just a doer to a leader? And what does that look like to lead up? You know, what does that look like to be a champion of ideas and to be able to move the mark further along than it's ever been before? It's going to take leadership. It's going to take knowing yourself well, knowing what you're able to present, learning how to pitch, learning how to compromise, and all those things. But, you know, as in communications, we can keep, you know, we can keep picking out good fonts and making things look better, or we can lead. We can change the way we lead as a church and how we communicate out and how we get people connected.
You know what's interesting, Dave, is that oftentimes the doers are so overwhelmed by how much stuff is given to them, where what we recommend, I mean, every book that I've ever read on leadership says that you've got to start looking outside and seeking help. And that's what I think is so cool about the CERT Lab, is that when people arrive for the certification training, you know, oftentimes we see doers walk in and we see everyone just have their head held higher as they leave, because they've had these leaders pouring into their lives for a couple of days. And I mean, I learn something every single time I listen to these people. They're all that good. And I mean, I look forward to it to help, because I get to pour into people's lives, but I also get poured into at the same time.
Yeah. So, Jerry, I know that aspect that Mark was just talking about, like, that's nothing new to you, because I know for me, you've done that sort of thing. You've kind of helped me redefine my thinking on dealing with limited resources and helping me, you know, come up with what it is I need to do to lead in my department. And I know that you've got a staff that reports to you, and I'm almost positive. I mean, I've never heard you say this, but I'm like 99% sure that there's been plenty of times where they come to you and they say, I need more. Like, I can't get this done. I need more. And the answer you have to give them is like, well, how do we rethink this? Like, do you have any examples of what that has looked like? Because I know, like I said, like, you've done it with me, you do it at the CERT Lab with the participants. What does that look like for you, you know, in your context there in San Antonio?
Yeah, great question. I think where we've found to the greatest help is when we educate our upper leadership, which I'm being educated by those that maybe report to me about the volume or the load that they're under. But then if I help bring that to the attention of those that are over me, that I report to, then I'm an advocate for those that are under this pressure of trying to produce too much in too little time. And so I think part of what I do is I start with what if questions. Well, what if we were able to do this? What if we were able to, and we begin to work through it together to see if is it really a load issue or an unreasonable expectation that's been put upon them? And if it truly comes down to that, then what my responsibility is then to bring that volume of information of all that's being expected to those who are in leadership above to say, what are your top priorities? What do you see are the top priorities? Out of these 18 things that are supposed to be moving forward that the ministries have put on us to say, we really need your help, which honestly, when they come to us, we want to say yes. We come with a yes heart, but we know we only have so much capacity. So we first start by processing one-on-one what ifs about how we can manage that load. And yeah. If that still doesn't come to the place where it works, then we go into prioritizing with those that are over us to guide us to say, this is what's most important to where we're going as a movement right now. Work on these top five things. Everything else, let's put off and let's delay. And then they go back to the ministry and let them know what senior leadership has decided to do. And that really helps protect them and move them through the process well.
Absolutely. You know, that makes me think of about a year ago, I had really hit a wall in my workload. I felt overwhelmed. I felt like, you know, there were all these expectations on me, whether I put them on myself because I just, you know, I want to see things look a certain way when they leave, you know, the office, when they leave the building. I want them to look a certain way. So whether I was putting those on myself or those were actually the expectations that leadership had for me, I met with my boss. I told him, I was like, I'm burned out. And he said what you said, but in a way that liberated me and gave me so much freedom. He said, what you need to do when you start feeling this way is you need to start listing all of the things that you feel like that are on your plate, and then together we can go through and we can prioritize that. And he also gave me a really good phrase that I wound up using with people is when, you know, someone other than him came in and I didn't have that relationship where I could, you know, necessarily be honest with how I was feeling, I would say, hey, that's a great idea. I really like that. I really want to see that happen. Here's what I have going on right now. Here's what's currently on my plate. And if it was a leadership person, I would say, what item do you want me to move down the list? What item takes lesser priority so I can bump this up? Or, you know, where would you like for this to fall on the list of my priorities? Do you feel like it should be in my top five? And it gave me some language to really allow them to set my priorities, so I wasn't saying no to one of the lead pastors and saying, no, I can't do that, but I was allowing them to say no to something that they had previously given me, you know, or allow them to say, you know what, it's really not that big of a deal. So I like that idea of prioritization, and I know for me when my boss, you know, gave me that freedom to say, hey, let's prioritize together and let's give you some language to rally around. That was huge. That was huge. Kelly, do you have anything? I mean, I know you chimed in with talking about Phil, but I know you're at a church plant, and I know that resources and limited resources is something that most church plants or even, you know, smaller churches in general deal with. Do you have anything, you know, that you would say about pursuing excellence with these limited resources that you'd, you know, like to contribute here?
Sure, and I don't know the guys in the room who are actual graphic designers might shoot me with this, but one of the things that I do, I'm responsible for a lot of the design. Fortunately, we have a mom church who shares design with us because we do some shared message series, but everything else is on me, and I'm not a trained designer. I'm a hack designer. So when it comes to things like social images that are so important right now, yeah. I use the tools that are online that are free, like Canva. I use all the time to put social media slides out there with scripture verses or whatever.
I want you to keep going there, but just tell me just real briefly, what is Canva and why would it be something I would want to check out?
Sure. If you go to canva.com, it's just an online graphic design. I don't know if real graphic designers would call it that, but it's a way that people like me who aren't professionally trained in graphic design can make really killer images that are shareable, compelling looking, and really good. And they have little training components too, and so it's a way for you to just do that quickly with excellence without feeling like you have to go to school to learn how to do it.
I love that. So Canva, so continue on.
And the other one I was going to mention is called WordSwag. It's an iPhone app that I use quite a bit. But other than that, Dave, I mean, I think the most important for me in trying to achieve excellence with limited resources is just admitting when it's beyond my capabilities.
Yeah.
I try not to say no to my staff, but I do say, okay, That sounds great. Here's what I can do instead. Mm-hmm. And then we have those kinds of conversations to make sure that I present their opportunity in the best light possible.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to, on this idea of limited resources, I know that a lot of churches, their lead pastors, when you know the communication person comes and says, I need more resources, a lot of times the first response is, well, you need to get more volunteers. And that was a huge struggle for me, because it was like, well, I've got this level of excellence, I've got limited resources, I need volunteers who can produce this excellent stuff, because we've set an expectation, whether or not we need to reset what that level of expectation is, but we've got that right there. I just want to throw it out there, because I actually don't know who to direct this towards. Do any of you feel like you've begun using volunteers in a good way, or you've seen a church that's used communication volunteers in a good way, or have a recommendation of how to kind of start that process?
For me, I found the biggest barrier to getting volunteers more engaged in your area is setting proper expectations for what those volunteers would do, setting job descriptions, and sometimes I think settling for having a small, high-powered volunteer team than a really high-numbered team that does very little, you know. And so I made a shift probably in year two in communications of saying, I don't need a team of 20, I need a team of like three, that are sold out, that are owning their areas and leading others within their areas, so that we can go further faster in that way. And so it took taking the time away, setting 2 days in my schedule to say, I'm going to build a job description, I'm going to kind of dream around what I want this to look like in a year, and try to find the person that's going to help me get there, and not settle until I find the right person. Absolutely. I wasn't going to just find anybody. And so there is giving yourself permission as well to say, hey, this may not be a good fit for communications. Let me find you another place somewhere else so that you can find the right person for your team.
Yeah. Hey, Jerry, I know you've been – are you going on 7 or 8 years at Oak Hills now?
Just past 7 years.
So you've obviously – I mean, being there, large church, lots of volunteers pull things off. What's the most effective way that you've found to find – you know, those types of volunteers that Phil's talking about, maybe not necessarily communication, but those high capacity, highly capable, you know, sold out volunteers, you really focus in on those. What's the best way that you found to draw those people out of your congregation?
A lot of the times it comes down to people who know people. And so having a connection with someone who knows that this person has a passion around writing, a creative writer, then they really want to use that gift for, whether it's social media or website or sermon open, those. Mm-hmm. So it's connecting with people who know people, and then they bring them into the ministry to find a place that fits well with the gifts and the strengths that they have, and then to find out, you know, by letting them demonstrate that it is a good fit for them, as Phil was talking about a little bit ago, and just finding that right place where they really feel like the gifts that God has given them are being used in a really powerful kingdom way. So honestly, since we have a little bit of a different model than many churches, we have a central support model.
Mm-hmm.
So a large volume of our staff work at a centralized office and don't work at the campus level as frequently. And so since we have 6 campuses, so there's fewer volunteers that we're engaging with because we're not as heavily invested at the campuses on a day-to-day basis with all those relationships. So that's why those relationship connections with the people we do know are really important to bring in. So if we have a volunteer who knows other people who do creative writing, we really tap into their relationship to say, invite them into the process with us.
Yeah, that's great. So let me ask you this question too, Jerry. I mean, you talk about volunteers, and obviously that leans into, you know, all sorts of personality types, and that those personality types exist within staff as well. And so I can't remember who was talking about the doers. It might have been you, Mark. You know, they come in as doers, and they kind of walk out as leaders. But, you know, when we're thinking about communication, I think a lot of times there's this pigeonhole that we put it in where communication is really an administrative thing, right? And it's just day-to-day type stuff. But what I'd actually kind of like to know a little bit more is, like, how do we kind of rethink communication if we're more administratively geared and just getting things done? How do we kind of start that conversation and move it towards, you know, getting creative in communication and not just looking at the facts as they are, but beginning to see our departments and our roles and our responsibilities as maybe they should be, not just to help the organization, but to really help the kingdom. And so I don't know, maybe the better way to say this is, what if we've got people who are not creative type people. And so we're talking about, you know, making changes, but they're very administratively focused, and making creative, you know, new changes is not for them. Jerry, I want you to kick it off, but then we'll let some others jump in. You know, how do you kind of move past that I'm an administrative doer type person to, you know, rethinking? And obviously going to the CERT Lab is one, because that's a huge part of what it is. But beyond that, what would you say?
Well, I'm personally of the opinion, and I think it bears out in Scripture, that God has created all of us to be creative. Mm-hmm. Whether you're the administrative side that are creating systems and processes, that's just as important as the person that is creating something that visually is compelling because it has an artistic value to it, that is compelling because of color, because of the way the words are positioned, that makes it really easy to read and understand. So both of those are equally important in creativity because they can complement one another. And so it's evaluating how do we help each of these types appreciate the creative gifts that they've been given and help them work together to bring them together towards a powerful solution. So that's what we really try to do, is show both as creative. Even our IT guys are considered creative, yeah, because it's a unique communication tool. So I think that helps us bridge the gap between the two.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
I talk to a lot of people, and they say, well, I'm just seen as administrative. I'm just a doer. Well, you're just a doer probably because you do an awful lot. And if you want to be perceived as a leader, you're going to have to step into that role. It's not an easy task. It's something that I think that every communications person, whether they're the communications director or whatever you call them, needs to have a seat at the table. They need to know what's going on at a leadership level so that they can impart leadership capabilities. If the senior leadership of a church is concerned about that happening, oftentimes it's because they're not perceived as leaders. And I think that what you need to do is you need to come to something like the CERT Lab, which will teach you leadership skills, read leadership books, you know, watch to see how the senior leadership works and acts, and how that they set upper level communication so that people will actually follow. In order to be a good leader, you need to have followers. And oftentimes we're so concerned about making sure that we're a good follower that we don't even invest ourselves into becoming leaders.
Yeah. Kelly, what about you? What would you say? I mean, if we've got people, you know, watching right now and they feel like they've kind of been relegated to a particular role for whatever the reason might be, how would you advise them? You know, you're sitting down having coffee. How would you advise them to kind of come out of their shell, so to speak, and not allow, you know, preconceived thoughts or preconceived cultures to, you know, hold them within what they feel like they've been relegated to? Like, how can they kind of break out of that?
Well, I think you just have to, first of all, decide to recognize the importance of your role. If you have the word communication in your title or in your job description, I think for me it was a wake-up call when I realized that every single thing that our church does communicates something to someone, mm-hmm, which means that I need to be speaking into hospitality even if it's just in little ways. I need to be speaking in little ways of what the stage looks like. I need to be looking at our external marketing. You know, what kind of outreach things are we doing? Are they cheesy? Are they going to turn off people who have kind of a Christians are stupid attitude? Or are they really compelling and curious, and people are going to be excited about them? So really for me, that was, like I said, that was my wake-up call. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm not just the bulletin girl. I'm the one who's going to care the most about everything that is happening in this church. And so I need to own that role and invite people to give me that sort of leadership. And that's hard. I mean, you've really got to have a little chutzpah to do that, right? And it's hard to feel like you can walk into the leadership team's office and say, hey, I want to talk to you about this. But yeah, honestly, a lot of leaders, once they get over that initial shock, they're like, oh my gosh, this person really cares about what we're doing, what our church's brand is, and they'll begin to listen.
Yeah, I found that, you know, you say you got to have that gumption there to do it. Sometimes I know that if I've looked at something as a huge picture and all of the multiple things that I, you know, it's like I want to see done, it feels overwhelming, or two, if I start voicing that, then I'm not seen as helpful, which I want to be. I'm seen as more of a you know, a negative Nicholas. I don't know what the what the wording is there. But what I found has been helpful for me, you know, both in stepping into a new area and also making sure that I can be heard, is to, you know, pick small things that I feel like I can make a big difference in that are kind of not low stakes, but they're not going to, you know, rub as hard. And if I can get a quick win in that, if I can say, okay, just, you know, making sure that the bulletins get printed, you know, and they're all folded and creased nicely. If I can pick off one thing and I can get a win there, then it's easier for me to get that momentum and start, you know, looking at bigger things. Okay, let's make sure that when, you know, I mean, this is just off the top of my head, but when our, you know, greeters pass out the bulletins, that they're facing the right direction, that it's in a way that's going to be, you know, when the person immediately looks at it, they don't have to turn it around. And so you pick off little things like that, little quick wins that are low stakes, and it, I think it builds your confidence, and I think that has helped other people build confidence in you to kind of bring you into other conversations. So I like that idea. I think I've seen that in my own in my own experience as well. So I think that's great.
Yeah, I'm giggling because I can see Mark smirking at you because the number of times you just said bulletin.
You have bulletins in your church?
You don't?
No, we do. And I guess that when the reason why I was smirking was you were saying, you know, start with the easy wins. Do not start with, let's get rid of our bulletin.
Yeah.
Hey, Dave, what you're saying too, one thing that I've learned too is if people that are moving from like trying to not be seen as just the administrative person,
yeah.
Creativity has the wrong definition. For a lot of people, they think of creatives as these people that go, you know, outside, and they always have a Mac, which is probably right. But you know, there's this definition that we have of like Steve Jobs or something as the creative. But really, creatives are just problem solvers. They're just people that find here's what the problem is. And so what I found as a really cool way to build good relationships with staff is instead of just them coming to me saying, hey, here's what we want designed, here's what we want this to look like, it's like, well, what's the problem you're looking to solve through this event? Like, what are you wanting to accomplish? And that takes a, you know, me to them relationship into let's partner together to create something. Let's solve your problem. And then that builds a good relationship to be able to find creative solutions together. And that's creativity. That's not administration. That's just solving problems.
And that's something that somebody will absolutely be drawn to if you try to solve their problems. You're not trying to solve your problems. It's just really coming alongside of somebody and saying, so talk to me. How can I help you? That wins every time.
Yeah, absolutely. Jerry, were you going to say something?
I was going to say that's what each of them, Kelly, Mark, and Philip, brought together is this proactive side of marrying that problem solving with leadership to lead out in that problem and then to propose and say, I think I have some solutions, some ideas that can meet that problem. And sometimes it may not be, like just like Phil said, it may not be me coming up with the solution. It's reaching out to others and to expose a solution, to engage in a conversation around what that solution could be. And so it's that's the thing I love about what I've really gained from the CERT Lab is that proactive side of how to lead out in those areas and gain the confidence through those conversations of hearing what others have done, like Phil and Kelly and Steve Brewster and Mark and some of the things that he's been through, that really helps me know how to lead out effectively in those areas. So that's been a big help, I think, at the CERT.
And Jerry, you're so good at servant leadership, just making sure that, you know, oftentimes we think that a leader has to be the abrasive, heavy-handed person, but yet, you know, coming at it the way that you talk in the CERT Labs about, you know, making sure that you're truly a servant. I mean, that's why I love this team.
Thank you, Mark. It's that tender-hearted, even when you sometimes need to be tough-minded. It's having that tender heart and keeping a hold of that is so important, and it's hard to do because there's a lot of times I fail in that and go right to the tough-minded, and it's a hard thing to do, but through Christ it's possible.
Well, let's lean into this topic a little bit because I mean, I'm just pulling from my experience here. When I go into, you know, a conversation with somebody and they don't see things my way, or they, you know, I feel like I'm coming in as the communicator who has been tasked with this job, and there's just this element of like, hey, don't fight me on this. Like, just let me do my job. Let me do what I was hired to do. I have the confidence of, you know, leadership placed in me. Don't fight me on, you know, making this decision of whether or not it should be a stage announcement or whether or not, you know, we should announce it to this group of people. And a lot of times, I mean, it's just resistance and rejection of, you know, whether people mean it or not. I actually think it's funny. I think a lot of times the church hasn't put such a value on communication and marketing that everybody just kind of assumed that role for themselves, right? Like, I'm responsible for communicating and marketing my own event. And so they kind of have this self-preservation attitude of if I don't push and get it out there, it's not going to be a success, and that'll look bad on me. So Jerry, you know, because that is an area that you're so gifted in, you know, what do you see as a common reason that staffers, that there's just this disharmony in working with staffers, and there is resistance to when, you know, you're trying to implement a system or you're trying to make a change or you're trying to say, hey, let's not do it the way that we've always done it. Let's try this and see if this works better. Where is that resistance rooted in, and how do we kind of fight against that? We don't take it personally, but we realize there's something going underneath. You know, there's an undercurrent there.
Well, I heard it say recently, I can't remember where, but the speaker said that people aren't so much concerned about your content when you go into the conversation as much, and not maybe even listening to the content. They're concerned about the intent. Mm-hmm. So they're assuming something going into the conversation because they don't think they're going to get all of what they want. And so they're already coming in with their guard up. And so what the speaker was doing, I wish I could tell you the name off the top of my head, but what the speaker was saying was we really have to reassure them of a mutual purpose and that you care deeply about them. And you all, so many of you were saying this earlier on in this conversation, that there's a mutual care for one another and that there's a mutual respect and that you value what God has called them to do there and that you're going to try to figure out how to do it together. And sometimes I just take some tough conversations. I've had a call from an elder before who asked me, why aren't you supporting this ministry? And I said, you mean out of the five things they asked for, we gave them four of the five and we're not supporting their ministry? Is that really right? And he was like, oh, no, I guess I didn't know about the other four. I thought you just said no to everything they wanted. I'm like, no, we didn't. Well, he didn't take the time to really ask that question of what all did they do for you. And so you have to assume the best about people when we go into those conversations and know that they care passionately about the vision and the ministry that they're trying to carry out. And then just reassure with a mutual purpose, mutual respect, and out of that you come together to be able to negotiate what the next step's going to be.
That's fantastic. And so, Phil, I know that you're at a large church, and I know that you know, at a large church like Westridge, there can be a lot of, you know, chefs in the kitchen, so to speak. So, you know, obviously everybody's got different ideas, and you're bringing things to the table in a new capacity. Like, where do you find that resistance comes from, and how do you find yourself overcoming that resistance and getting to that point that Jerry was talking about that mutual beneficial point?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'll just say I'm lucky that we have a pastor and our lead team that are equipped to do our jobs, you know, and so, and there's not a whole lot of, there's a lot of trust that we share, and there's a lot of accountability that we own when we don't bring something to the table that we should have or something. But I think so I feel lucky in that. I know that's not the common answer for a lot of people, but I think the biggest thing is if you can push through at the beginning of conversations like that of what is the objective that you're both looking to accomplish, it makes a lot of the other stuff easier. It makes it easier to know where you need to compromise. But where people struggle is when they have two completely different objectives that they're looking to accomplish with communications and what their ministry is looking to accomplish, and they're not shared. And so what happens is that they conflict. And so when you are able to decide on that, then you have that problem to solve. Then you know what that thing is that you're both striving for, and it's easier to accomplish that compared to both having your own agendas and just caring about one thing or the other. And sometimes it's communicating to a ministry that saying, hey, we want the pastor to communicate this on stage, we want this. Well, we can all share the same objective from a communication standpoint of saying, hey, you know that moment at the end of the service when the pastor gets up and talks for 10 minutes. Do you remember those moments? Nobody does. Nobody wants to hear anybody talk for 10 minutes about things we want them to do. So we have to be careful and be good stewards of that service. So what we're going to have to do is get creative about how we can communicate that or things like that. So finding that shared objective and working from that instead of just working out of your own priorities.
That's really good. I like that. Mark, you work with a lot of leaders, and so you see it from, you know, kind of the top down, and, you know, they come to you and, you know, you work through that process with them. You know, what's their thought process, you know, through working with communication directors, and you know, do they see it as, you know, someone just always pushing back, or, you know, how do they perceive this relationship?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, I guess some churches see it as, you know, we just wish that we could have a more effective website, or we just wish that the bulletin process would work well. And I mean, what they're trying to do is they're just trying to solve a communication issue that's happening in the church. And oftentimes their reaction is, I don't know whether that's the person I need to talk to. And sometimes that's their communications person.
Yeah.
And I guess that we need to become solution-oriented and not just people that say no all the time. We can't do it all, but if you can create a structure where you actually have a prioritization or a tiered system of communication, so you actually know when somebody asks you something, you don't have to say, I don't really want to do that. Instead, it's, here's the grid that we have that determines what happens in the church. This has actually been sanctioned by the senior leadership, yeah. And so therefore, I have to put it into this, you know, into this structure.
Yeah.
And somehow then turn it around to say, so what is it that you actually want to do?
Yeah.
And perhaps there's another way that I can help you. Yeah. And what it does is it just, we just like I always have to keep reminding the church that we have to be solutions to the community. We as individuals have to be known for the solutions that we offer within the small team that we're working with.
Absolutely. I like that. Kelly, I want to wrap up this section because I want to get to something that's very important. But I know that you have, you know, we've talked before, and I know that you have a very good relationship with the leadership at your church. And so I just want to know real quick from the other end of you're not battling this resistance or rejection. What are some of the things that have kind of built that trust? And I know that that's a big question, and I'd like for you to answer it as briefly as possible.
Sure. Actually, that's what I was hoping I'd have a chance to say this. For me, building trust with the leadership at our church was I told them what I was going to do, and then I actually did it. The worst thing that you can do is overpromise and underdeliver. If you're just trying to say yes to make somebody happy, but you know it's not going to happen, that's going to just destroy trust among your leadership team, and then you won't have any credibility with them.
That's great, and that really just sums up a whole lot of things, rabbit trails we could go down, but that really is the genesis, I think, of building that trust, is just doing what you say you're going to do. So, you know, as we're kind of coming up here on the hour mark, I really do want to turn attention and focus real quick, because I want the certification lab. I mean, that's we're talking about stuff that comes up in that certification lab, and I want people who are watching right now to be able to make an educated decision on whether or not the certification lab is the best next step in the evolution of their communications department and the evolution of communication and marketing at their church. And so I was able to attend the one in Los Angeles, and it was fantastic. I have to be honest, I went in with the notion that, you know, it was going to be a lot of stuff that, you know, I'd been in communications 4 or 5 years, a lot of stuff that I already knew, but what I found, and maybe you guys will agree with me on this, is that there might have been elements that, yeah, I knew that, but there were a whole bunch of, you know, there was a whole other categories that it's like, man, I'd never really spent the time to think about that. And I know Stephen Brewster wasn't able to be with us today, but I know that the creative part that he talked about was one of those areas. So I just want to kind of open up the conversation a little bit about Certification Lab and just give each of you an opportunity to talk about what value you really feel like Certification Lab is bringing based upon, you know, you being there and learning from the instructors, but based upon what you've been, you know, how your participants have been communicating with you. So, Phil, let's just start with you. Like, what value do you really see Certification Lab bringing, you know, to participants? I want them to be able to make that decision and be able to sell it in all integrity to their leadership, so they know that this is the best next step.
Yeah, it's hard to find spaces and places in our day-to-day where not only are we equipped to do our job better, but we're encouraged to continue on and keep the fight going. You know, a lot of people do feel alone, and so it's so great to sit in a room of people that are hungry to learn, but to also realize you're not alone. You're not alone, and to hear people just say that, like, yeah, that's me too, have those moments together is just powerful. So the connection that we're able to have in that smaller environment is powerful because the people that are attending are able to build long-lasting connections and get resources from each other, to be able to get feedback from each other. But we also have a small enough environment, too, where all of the communicators are able to have hands-on time to be able to answer questions, to dive deeper in certain areas. And what I love, too, is just every one of the communicators is different. You know, there's no one person that just says, oh, I feel like I already heard that. Often what we find is they layer on together of, like, hearing a couple of different approaches that you can say, hey, that applies really well for me, and maybe I can take that over here and this, and be able to walk away with something that you can do different and be able to add value right away when you walk when you walk back to your church.
Yeah, absolutely. Kelly, you know, we've got the two dates. We've got Dallas and we've got St. Louis coming up. And so what would you say? Somebody's really thinking about it and like, man, is this the best next step? What would you say that time represents together? And you know, what does that time represent, and what is it that you think that they can walk out with?
Well, I mean, my first answer, honestly, would be exactly what Phil just said, that camaraderie that happens, that, oh my gosh, I'm not the only one who feels like I don't know what I'm doing. I think that's really helpful. But in addition to that, if you're the kind of person who's sitting there going, okay, people keep saying I need a communication plan, and I don't even know the first step to get that going, that it's a perfect place for folks like that to be. That's not to say that people who have been in it for a while won't find value, but for me, I have seen people just their eyes open. They're like, oh, it's not, okay, I get it. And then they can go home and start scribbling and sharing with their leaders and experience success, and that's been really fun to see.
Absolutely fantastic. Jerry, it's a financial investment. I mean, not only the cost of the lab itself, but to get to the hotel, to get on the plane, and it's a big investment, and especially for a lot of churches, there's going to need to be some selling there. Where is the value that you see, you know, participants who are watching right now being able to present and say to their leadership, hey, this is why this is a win for us?
I think the thing that I've found that's really helpful through this, in addition to what Kelly and Phil have said, is that it really sets the communicator up for those conversations with senior leadership.
Yeah.
Go into those conversations with more confidence and to also to get some practical and real helpful insight from other communicators that help protect, you know, like in change management. How do I bring about change so that I'm not going to put my senior leadership in a difficult position of damage control? So how do I pace that change? So it answers a lot of those kinds of questions that helps protect that relationship and continue to foster and build that trust with the senior leaders. So I think that's going to be a big help.
Yeah, absolutely. And Mark, I'm going to give you a chance to just kind of wrap up the talk about Certification Lab here. I mean, I know that this is something very near and dear to your heart. And so, you know, it's kind of the same question, but you take it wherever you want to. Like, where is the value in this? Like, why is this worth the investment? Why is this worth my time? And, you know, what kind of transformation is going to happen inside of me as a communications director or communications worker coming in and then going out? I mean, you said something great already. You come in as a doer and you kind of walk out as a leader, but, you know, build upon that if you would and kind of wrap it up here for us.
Well, as I was listening to each person say what the benefit is, I mean, it really is what they just said. You know, many of you are probably saying, well, I don't know whether I can go or not. I mean, you just have to. I mean, I'm amazed at when I talk to people. We have a small reception on the Sunday night for anyone who arrives early enough for that. And when I'm talking to people, the first thing that I always hear is, wow, I'm not really sure what I'm going to get out of this, but I just feel so alone. There's no one that fully understands who I am in the church. And you know, I came up through advertising agencies, secular advertising agencies. Creatives will always feel that way. We're the ones that have to be the solution makers, and oftentimes we're trying to one up ourselves every single time, and sometimes people don't even like our solutions. But what I've found over the few years that we've been doing the CERT Lab is that these people, and I feel bad that Stephen Brewster's not here. He had an unexpected meeting come up, but these people, along with Stephen Brewster, really pour into your life, and they pour into your life not by just a lot of theory, but here's how I have practically done it. This is the way that we've found success in our church.
Yeah.
And the cool thing is that every person walks away with a to-do list of, you know what, I need to do this before I go any further. And what we see when people arrive at the reception on Sunday evening and when they leave on Tuesday after just two short days with these people, really, seriously, there's something that looks different on their face. They are holding their head higher thinking, I can really do this. I can lead upwards. Yeah. And you know, what's cool is that we have this after lab where we connect with everybody after the actual certification lab, where we get to check in with people, and it's so cool. I know from the last time that we did it at Saddleback Church in California, on the Facebook wall this week alone, people were like, hey, I just had a win, and just hearing those things, I know that it makes me extremely happy. Can you tell that I just love this thing?
I mean, I love
every person here, and ultimately, we have a mission and a ministry to actually communicate what our churches are doing to our communities, and we have to get this right.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. Well, guys, this has been fantastic. I just want to let everybody know watching that, you know, there's a lot of really good stuff in here, and regardless of whether or not you are even considering the Certification Lab, this replay is going to be available at churchmarketingsucks.com. And so if you want to, you know, go back and listen to some of the things that we said, and even maybe if you are considering Certification Lab, this might be a great conversation to listen to with the pastor who makes that decision or the administrator who makes that decision. But I just want to let everybody know that the Certification Lab presented in partnership with Monk Development, that there are the two cities. We've got St. Louis and we've got Dallas. St. Louis is June 8th and 9th, and Dallas is the early one. That's March 16th and 17th. Now, early rates, they end this Sunday, so we're recording this on, what is it, like the February 5th today, I think it is. So they end this Sunday on February 8th, so if that's something that you want to do and you want to, you know, capitalize on that early adopter rates, get in on it, because that's going to be the best rate possible. But, you know, regardless of where you're at, hopefully our conversation today really provided some value. Hopefully you see why we are so passionate about doing the Certification Lab, because quite honestly, your job, you know this, you're a communications person, your job is multifaceted. There are so many expectations of you. There are so many things that you are responsible for. And quite honestly, without the community and without the people surrounding you with the, hey, you can do this, you've got this, it can be very, very overwhelming. And so we hope that that if this is the right next step for you, that you would really strongly consider it that. And be in prayer. We'll be in prayer that God will be bringing the right people to this Certification Lab, and hopefully that's you. So instructors, thank you so much for your time. I know you guys are really busy, so it means the world to me and to our audience that you guys not only do the Certification Lab, but make your time available here for this hangout, because this is really valuable. I hope you guys see that what you've just done is incredibly valuable. So thank you very much. It's a privilege. So,
thanks, Dave.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, can
thank
we get
you,
a one, two, three, like a chow on three or something like that? Let's just do chow. I get to make that call. I'm the host. So on three, we'll do chow. Three, two, one.
Ciao.
We'll see y'all. Thanks so much. Certification Lab is cfcclabs.org/certification. So get signed up. cfcclabs.org/certification. See you guys. Bye.